Today we're reading from the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj to Nrisimhadev, Canto 7, Chapter 9, Verse 44.
Prayena deva munaya svavi mukti kama. Monam charanti vijanena paratta nishtha. Naitan vihaya kripanan vimumuksha eko. Nanyam tvad asya sharanam brahmato nupashye.
Prayena. Generally, in almost all cases.
Deva. O my Lord,
Munaya, the great saintly persons,
Sva,
personal,
own,
Vimuktikama, ambition for liberation from this material world,
Monam,
silently,
Charanti,
they wander in places like the Himalayan forests, where they have no touch with the activities of the materialists.
Vijane,
in solitary places.
Na,
not.
Para artha nishtaha,
interested in working for others, by giving them the benefit of the Krishna consciousness movement, by enlightening them with Krishna consciousness.
Na,
not.
Etan,
these.
Vihaya,
leaving aside.
Kripanan,
fools and rascals, engaged in materialistic activity, who do not know the benefit of the human form of life.
Vimumukshe,
I desire to be liberated and to return home back to Godhead.
Ekaha,
alone.
Na,
not.
Anyam,
other.
Tvat,
but for you.
Asya,
of this.
Sharanam,
shelter.
Brahmataha,
of the living entity, rotating and wandering throughout the material universes.
Anupashye,
do I see? Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord Nrisimhadev, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, monvrat. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to this shelter at your lotus feet. Purport. This is the decision of the Vaishnava, the pure devotee of the Lord. For himself, he has no problems, even if he has to stay in this material world, because his only business is to remain in Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious person can go even to hell and still be happy. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj said, Naivod vijay para duratyaya vaitaranyaha. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. The pure devotee is never unhappy in any condition of life. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17:28. Narayana para sarve nakutasthana bibhyate. Svarg apavarga narakesh api tulyarta darshina. Devotees solely engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. For a devotee, being situated in the heavenly planets and being in the hellish planets are equal. For a devotee lives neither in heaven nor in hell, but with Krishna in the spiritual world. The secret of success for the devotee is not understood by the karmis and jnanis. Karmis therefore try to be happy by material adjustment, and jnanis want to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme. The devotee has no such interest. He is not interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest. Rather, his interest is in the busiest part of the world, where he teaches people Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious movement was started for this purpose. We do not teach one to meditate in a secluded place, just so that one may show that he has become very much advanced and may be proud of his so-called transcendental meditation, although he engages in all sorts of foolish materialistic activity. A Vaishnava like Prahlad Maharaj is not interested in such a bluff of spiritual advancement. Rather, he is interested in enlightening people in Krishna consciousness because that is the only way for them to become happy. Prahlad Maharaj says clearly, Nanyam tvat asya sharanam brahmato nupasye. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. One wanders within the universe life after life, but by the grace of a devotee, a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can get the clue to Krishna consciousness and then not only become happy in this world, but also return home back to Godhead. That is the real target in life. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement are not at all interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest, where one will only make a show of meditation. Nor are they interested in opening many schools for yoga and meditation in the cities. Rather, every member of the Krishna consciousness movement is interested in going door to door to try to convince people about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That is the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be fully convinced that without Krishna one cannot be happy. Thus, the Krishna conscious person avoids all kinds of pseudo-spiritualists, transcendentalists, meditators, monists, philosophers, and philanthropists. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Budle Shimati Bhakti Viranta Swami Niti Namini. Namaste Saraswati Deve Guravani Pracharini Nirvisesa Sunyavari Paschati Desatarini. Om Agyanati Murandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Srila Prabhupada has left his testing grounds of Butler, Pennsylvania, where he has become assured that even the middle class people in America have some God consciousness, and they're curious, they're interested in his message. They were willing to come every night to hear him, and he was also able to give lectures in places like churches and colleges. So he felt encouraged. And now is the time, after 1 month, to move to his real goal, which is setting up a Radha Krishna temple in New York City. This was what Prabhupada wanted to accomplish in New York. So he went for the 2 days to Philadelphia, where he spoke in the Sanskrit classes of Dr. Norman Brown, and also gave his Srimad Bhagavatams to the library. And then he proceeded on to, again, Port Authority Bus Terminal in New York City. It's the hub of all the travelers, of the middle-class, low-class people traveling by buses. Otherwise, there's trains and planes and things like that. So from Port Authority Terminal, that's at 34th Street, Prabhupada had a friend named Paramananda Mishra, in Bombay, who had an acquaintance in New York. This was Dr. Ramamurti Mishra. Dr. Mishra was born in Kashi. When he was 6 years old, he died. For 36 hours, he was dead. And his father took him to the Ganga to burn his body. And as they were about to light the fire, he sat up. So he considered that day, March 6th, to be his birthday. So from childhood, he was always interested in mysticism and yoga, but being from Kashi, he was very much influenced by Shankara Advaita Tattva. So his guru was in Bombay, Sri Bhagavan Das. And he went to America, just as many monist Mayavadi Swamis went to America to establish a yoga society. And that was the name of his mission, the Yoga Society of America, some incorporated society. And he first went there as a doctor. He was a medical doctor. And he had written books in India about yoga and psychology, about self-realization and self-knowledge. And with these books, he went to America with his mission. Finally, after a few years, his medical practice, he was also a neurosurgeon at Bellevue Hospital. Bellevue Hospital is where they send all the crazy people in New York City. That's where they sent Kirtananda Swami when he went to the draft board dressed up as a devotee. He's fit for Bellevue. So he was working there as a neurosurgeon, but his yoga was becoming more popular. So he stopped his medical practice and he became a full-time bogus yogi. So he was teaching then different forms of Hatha Yoga and what he considered to be Raja Yoga. He was famous for Raja Yoga. And in 1964, because the uptown swamis, they attracted all different classes of people in New York City. It's like flocks of birds. There may be so many birds, but different birds always flock together. Even when Prabhupada was down on the Lower East Side in the Bowery, there was one flock of type of people who went to the Bowery, and then another type who went to 22nd Avenue. So up in uptown, these uptown swamis, they would attract middle-aged women, widows who had a lot of money, who supported the gurus, people who were searching but not really ready to dedicate themselves to anything spiritual. They're just curious. So these were the type of people that were learning Hatha Yoga and Raja Yoga from Dr. Mishra. And with their help, he was able to acquire a 4 or 6 acre ashram in Monroe, New York, that's in the hills of New York, called the Ananda Ashram. It was just 1 year before Prabhupada went there in 1965, this new ashram. So on weekends, he would take his pupils to this Ananda Ashram and they would have meditation there. And he would give classes on Shankara's philosophy of Mayavada. So when Prabhupada arrived there, it was October, Dr. Mishra, by that time, he was very unhealthy himself. He didn't like to cook for himself, so he said he was like a skeleton because he was very erratic in his habits, although he was a doctor. So Prabhupada immediately started to regulate Dr. Mishra's life by cooking for him. Now it's time for Bhagavat Prasadam, sit down. So Dr. Mishra had Prabhupada stay. In his own apartment. It was a posh apartment with a doorman. And in Manhattan, there are different parts of the city. So he was on Riverside Drive. Riverside Drive is on the west part of Manhattan. It's right on the Hudson River. Now here we have the Jamuna. Now the not now during the lockdown, but normally the Jamuna has become polluted with the sewage of the other cities in the north. But previously when Prabhupada lived here, the Jamuna was pristine pure. We would just go and drink right from the river there. It was so pure. So the Hudson River, although it was a big river that separated New York from New Jersey, it had just become like a sewer. It smelled. And New York itself, Prabhupada mentioned that anywhere you went in New York, it smelled like dog stool. So the air was unclean in New York. The whole consciousness was impure, polluted. But there were nicer parts of town, and where Dr. Mishra lived was a nice part of town. He lived on the 14th floor of this nice apartment building and had windows overseeing the river. So when he met Prabhupada, when Prabhupada came and introduced himself, he immediately took Prabhupada in. And Prabhupada was very fatherly to him, cooking for him. They would have very heated debates philosophically, but they were still friends. So Prabhupada lived right there in his apartment with him on Riverside Drive. And Prabhupada again used to wash his clothes in the bathroom and hang them up there in the bathroom. And when the students would come for Dr. Mishra's classes, they'd see Prabhupada's clothes in the bathroom. And Dr. Mishra would have Prabhupada attend his lectures, but he wouldn't let him lecture. Because one time he let Prabhupada lecture, and Prabhupada immediately blasted him. Right away, that this is bogus, he's following Shankaracharya, he's this. And even Shankaracharya said that Narayanam Para, that the Supreme Lord is above everything, he's a Mayavadi. And this was Dr. Mishra's class students hearing this. So they had a heated argument right in front of all the pupils. So after that, Dr. Mishra didn't dare to let Prabhupada lecture again. Only when Dr. Mishra was out of the room or someplace else, Prabhupada would begin lecturing. So, but he would allow Prabhupada to sing bhajans and kirtan. And Dr. Mishra himself was enlivened, he said, because he was one of these swamis. He said, yes, you have an electric, every time the swami sings, you can feel the electric current of his voice if you just meditate on that voice. So, you know, he was speaking for the Americans. But he allowed Prabhupada to sing. And Prabhupada even, he taught all of Dr. Mishra's pupils the swami step. Now, nowadays we have, I don't know where this, window washing and all different types of things that people do with their hands. But Prabhupada taught us how to dance, like Lord Chaitanya. You put your arms up and you put your one foot to the other, one foot to the other. If you ever watch Prabhupada, I used to watch him when he would come to visit the temples. He always danced like Lord Chaitanya, very beautifully, just like we see them here. No window washing. So if there was some way, just like we have kirtan reform movement, we should also have dancing reform movement. And we should dance like Lord Chaitanya danced with his associates. So this is the way Prabhupada taught all these pupils how to dance. And even if they were interested or not interested, when Prabhupada began his kirtan, these students would get up and dance with Srila Prabhupada during the kirtans. So after a while, after a few weeks, it became a little inconvenient for Dr. Mishra to keep Prabhupada in his apartment. And he had a yoga studio about, still on the west side, but Prabhupada had to walk like 7 blocks. Because in this yoga studio, it was in the center portion of a corner building at 172nd Street. The streets go up and down, avenues go up and down, streets go across. So 72nd was uptown, but some distance from Riverside Drive. So this yoga studio was on the inside of the building, no windows. And the adjacent room also had no windows. And that was where he had Prabhupada live. But because there was nowhere to bathe and nowhere to cook, Prabhupada would walk every morning to Dr. Mishra's apartment, cook, feed Dr. Mishra, and then go back to the apartment, go back to his room, and work on his manuscripts with his typewriter. One of Dr. Mishra's students offered Prabhupada a tape recorder. In those days, tape recorders were about this big, and they weighed about 10 kilos. So, and they had big, big reels on them. Things weren't so developed in those days in the 60s. So she offered him one of these tape recorders, and you'll still hear in the vintage bhajan series, Prabhupada used to sing kirtan all alone with just his kartals. He didn't have any mridanga. He didn't even have the one-headed tum-tum. He just had his kartals at that time. And he would play these reels, and we still have those songs that Prabhupada, and bhajans that Prabhupada used to sing there. So Prabhupada, he was still under the wing of Dr. Mishra in that little room. He wanted freedom. He wanted to be able to preach Krishna consciousness. So eventually, after another month or so, and Prabhupada during this whole time, although some people were interested in what he was saying and interested in his bhajans, they would come to visit Prabhupada in this room, Prabhupada knew that he needed to be separated from Dr. Mishra. The only association Prabhupada really had was he would write letters to his godbrothers, to Tirtha Maharaj, to Ban Maharaj, and try to encourage them to help him to fulfill the desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to establish Krishna consciousness in the Western countries. None of them were interested. They would always write back negatively that we also have no men and no money. We have to use all of our resources here in India. Plus, you can't even get money out of India at that time. Then he would write to a big industrialist in Kanpur. Later they all became our life members, the Singhania family. Lajpat Ram Singhania, Lajpat Rai Singhania. The Singhania towers are still there in Kanpur. So he was encouraging Mr. Singhania to make a Radha Krishna temple in New York City. And Prabhupada, sometimes he would go by bus, he would be walking around. It was already very cold in New York, but still he would take walks, looking for buildings. And he found a very suitable building on 75th Street, right nearby. It had three basement, first floor, upper floor. So he wrote to Mr. Singhania that this would be ideal. We have prasadam distribution on the bottom, lecture hall, and then residence and the deity's place on the top. And Mr. Singhania, he said, if I'm going to make a temple, I'm going to send my man, and it'll be a proper temple according to Vedic Shastra. This is the only way I'll make a temple. So Prabhupada can try to convince him, well, we'll make something on top, a shikhar, and we'll make it look like a temple. But Mr. Singhania wasn't interested. And then Prabhupada tried to convince him. He said, you're a Dwarkawala, and I'm a Brijbasiwala. We have to combine the two. In Dwarka, yes, they're big temples, but I'm just a simple Brijbasi, and we should work together to glorify Krishna and bring Radha and Krishna here to New York. Mr. Singhania stopped answering his letters. Then the only person who encouraged Prabhupada in what he was doing was Srimati Sumati Morarji. She would answer Prabhupada's letters, and she gave him the guiding strength that he needed. She said, wait until your health has improved and do not return to India until you have fulfilled your mission. So with this advice from Sumati Morarji, Prabhupada decided to extend his three-month visa and stay in America to attempt, he was writing to in his diary, how can I return unsuccessful to India? What will I do there? I have no other purpose in my life than to fulfill the order of my spiritual master. I must stay, no matter how difficult it is. So long as Prabhupada was staying under the wing of Dr. Mishra, Dr. Mishra was financially supporting Prabhupada. But Prabhupada didn't want that support. He wanted to be able to preach Krishna consciousness. So he was on the fifth floor at that time, 501. He found a little office space, number 307. It was like you walk into a train car, very long and very narrow, completely empty. There was no furniture whatsoever, but it did have a window, and it had a sink. Again, no place for bathing or cooking. So still Prabhupada would go and cook and bathe at Dr. Mishra's, but he was able to hold his own programs there. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, these were the days that Prabhupada had Bhagavad Gita classes. And the first class he gave is what we now have as the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita in our Bhagavad Gita as it is. And from then on, you can check with the archives. Every single day and night, Prabhupada was giving a lecture, either in the morning or in the evening. And he was going through from the second chapter, second, third, fourth. And some of the students that were from Dr. Mishra and Ananda Ashram, they were attracted to Srila Prabhupada. And they would come to these lectures regularly. And some of them had very pleasant memories of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada also had a friend in what was called the India House. India House was the embassy of the Indian consulate. So he arranged a lecture for Prabhupada at the Tagore Society. And Prabhupada was sitting there in the audience. A few people attended. There was a Muslim man who sat next to him. And they had a nice conversation. Prabhupada then was introduced to speak. He gave a very, very powerful lecture, mostly Indians who had attended. And then afterwards, about 15 people were very interested in meeting Prabhupada, asking him, "Can you become my guru?" Because actually, by nature, the Indian mentality is, you just have to scratch the surface a little bit. Everyone knows about Krishna. Just like sparking a match, anywhere a devotee goes, automatically the Indian people will be attracted and they'll want to hear about Krishna consciousness. So that's what happened at this Tagore Society. So Prabhupada was trying to answer the questions. At the same time, people were trying to buy his books. So he asked the Muslim gentleman, "You sell my books while I'm talking to the people." He sold about six sets of books. And then Prabhupada was, you know, Prabhupada always took contacts and kept in contact with the people that were interested, always knew their names. This is one thing I learned as soon as I came to India for preaching, how Prabhupada taught the devotees how to preach here. Whenever they went to a program, they would take everyone's name and address and then follow up, meet them, make them into life members, have programs at their houses, go to their offices, everything. And this, in that way, it was like an atomic chain reaction. You go to one program, there are 20 people there, then you have 20 contacts. So we all learned this from Prabhupada. This is how Prabhupada established the society. Taking contacts, meeting them, having programs, and more contacts. So Prabhupada did this also very early in America. But this room number 307, because it was an office, Prabhupada put his name and the timings of his lectures, but no, who could see in an office building? Only these few people were coming from Dr. Mishra's. So, because it was an office building, it had a glass door and a little transom window made out of glass. So one day while Prabhupada was out, and he would have to, because now he was on his own, he only had the sales of his books and whatever small donations these students would give him during the classes, he would have to go buy his own things. And he would keep in his diary his accounts. Red chili pepper, he noted, it cost 10 times more to buy a little packet of red chili pepper than here in India. One banana, 25 cents. That was equivalent to 10 rupees. So it was very difficult for Prabhupada. And this was the type of things he would buy. He had so little money. So, and those few cents he would use on his personal needs. So one day while he was out, someone broke into his little room and they stole his typewriter and his tape recorder, the only two things he had of value. Immediately Prabhupada went to check when he came into the room and saw the things were missing. Actually, the janitor, the, what are they called here? Janitors? The Karmacharis. He told Prabhupada that, oh, someone's broken into your room. So Prabhupada immediately understood that this was probably the person who did it, because he was always there cleaning. So Prabhupada immediately went to check. They didn't touch his manuscripts, fortunately. Prabhupada had his manuscripts all tied up in saffron cloth for typing and eventually for publishing. So Prabhupada became a little discouraged. Immediately some of the students said, well, I'll give you another typewriter, I'll give you another tape recorder. But the more sympathetic one said, Prabhupada, this is not the place for you. Now, one of the students, Harvey Cohen, he would go down to Lower East Side where all the young people lived. And in the Lower East Side, there was a restaurant. It was a macrobiotic restaurant. Macrobiotics come from Zen Buddhism. Completely bland, nothing. They use onions, that's all. It was brown rice and vegetables. And this macrobiotic restaurant, they would give free tea to anybody who there. You could spend all day in this restaurant, Paradox Restaurant, nobody cared. It was a meeting center for the young hip people who lived down in the Lower East Side. So Harvey told his friend, Bill Epstein, who was one of the waiters there, about this Swami who was giving really good lectures on Bhagavad Gita. People knew about Bhagavad Gita, but they had never heard a devotional rendition of Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita that they heard from the impersonalist Swamis was the killing of Krishna. They wanted to remove Krishna entirely, because according to Mayavad, bhakti is inferior. And when you attain perfection, none of the different forms of the Lord have any meaning, the panchopasana. So they considered bhakti to be inferior to Brahman realization. So when Harvey and Bill being very very charismatic person, he would tell all the young people, why not check out this Swami up at 72nd Street? So the young people started coming, and these young people were dressed a little differently than Dr. Mishra's students, because those were more middle class and very establishment type people. So when the young people started coming, the Dr. Mishra's students became discouraged and they stopped coming. So finally the young people, enough young people came, and after this theft, they said, Swamiji, why don't you come down where all of us live? You'll get so many people interested. You see, we're all coming so far. This is like 70 blocks they had to go by subway just to hear this lecture of Prabhupada 3 nights a week. So you come be with us, Prabhupada. And then one of them, I think it was Harvey, he was moving to California. And he had a loft. Loft is these AIR lofts, artists in residence. My brother had a loft, so we used to go there. The artists and the musicians, they lived in these cheap rent lofts in New York City. They were up on the third, fourth, or fifth floors of these tenement buildings. Big, huge space, like the size of our Darshan Mandap. Completely empty. Some of them would share with their friends. They would build different sections, one place a kitchen, one place a bathroom, one place for sleeping, like that. Because they had all this space that used to be factories. So Harvey said, you stay in my loft. And one 18-year-old boy, David Allen, he was going to share the loft with Prabhupada. And they were going to split the rent. It was very cheap. So Prabhupada moved down there. He took his few belongings, moved to the loft on the fourth floor of this building. But Prabhupada didn't understand. Now, the Dr. Mishra's students, they warned Prabhupada. The Prabhupada, actually, it was the electrician in the building, 172nd Street. He said, "You shouldn't move to the Bowery. That's the worst part of New York City. That's where all the drunks live, all the derelicts. Don't go there. Stay here. You're safe here." But how could he be safe? If he got another typewriter, and anyone could break into the room again. So Prabhupada decided he was going to make the move, no matter what the insecurity was. Because the young people, they wanted him down there. So he went to where he was wanted, where he was appreciated, and where he was going to attract more students. So he had his first meeting there, and because in the Bowery it was musicians and artists, these were the type of people. They would see Prabhupada walking, they would hear that there was a Swami now in the Bowery, and these were the people who started coming to visit Prabhupada. And one of them, his name was Michael Grant. Prabhupada used to call him Mr. Michael. He later became Mukunda Das. And his girlfriend Jan, she was the first female disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He named her Janaki. And there was another graduate from Cornell University. Cornell is a very high-class university. Carl Jurgens. He would also come to hear Prabhupada. He also was initiated by Prabhupada. Prabhupada named him Karlapati Das. So some of these artists and musicians, they were very astounded that they had a Swami now in the Bowery where they all lived. And they would tell their friends, and they would come and hear Prabhupada, and they would bring all their musical instruments. Michael Mukunda, he was very attracted by Prabhupada's lecture. And he wanted to ask questions to Prabhupada. But he was a musician. He was a pianist. He played the piano. So he went up to Prabhupada after the first class that he heard. And instead of asking a question, he said to Prabhupada, "I have a tambora." Prabhupada said, "Bring it." So everyone would, all these musicians, they were bringing their instruments, and it was like a jam session there. They would have all their instruments, and Prabhupada would be singing, and they really got into the music. And Prabhupada, he knew they were musicians, they were coming for the ecstasy of the music, but Prabhupada didn't care. They brought their flutes, and then Michael told Prabhupada he had some money, and he was saving it to go to India to learn how to play Indian flute, like you see the devotees here playing the flute. So Prabhupada, he told Michael, he said, "Do you know that some of the flute players in India, they spit up blood? It's so difficult to play the flute if you go to learn." So Michael was thinking, "I don't want to spit up blood." So he decided not to go and learn how to play the flute. Prabhupada had a plan. Prabhupada told him, "I'll teach you how to play piano for Krishna." So Michael was saying, "How do you play piano for Krishna? You know, big piano." There was the harmonium, of course. And Prabhupada taught him how to play mridanga. And Prabhupada would watch over him. First kitata, kitata. And Prabhupada taught him that when you play mridanga, you have to speak the sounds at the same time, because that's the sound that the mridanga makes. And Prabhupada would watch over him and enjoy his mridanga playing. So these musicians, Prabhupada knew how to engage them, and the artists. And then one day Prabhupada announced at one of his classes that he was going to have a love feast. What's a love feast? It sounded very hippie-ish. And they weren't exactly hippies, these musicians and artists. They were they had jobs, they were jazz artists, and jazz musicians. So what does Swami mean by a love feast? So he invited them all, "You come on Sunday, we're going to have a love feast." So about 18 people showed up, and Prabhupada had cooked like 12 different preparations. And he was going around having them all sit down, feeding them all, being the most gracious host to all of them. And they had seen a whole other side, because they knew Prabhupada as a scholar, as a philosopher, as a teacher, but now he was being just social with them and speaking to them and smiling and feeding them, take more, take more. So they became very friendly and affectionate to Prabhupada after this. So then what happened was, this 18-year-old David Allen, other people call him Paul, but Prabhupada called him David Allen, Mr. David. He was a young boy, and a lot of people came to New York at that time, young men and women, because, oh, and by the way, Dr. Mishra at his Anand Ashram, he used to host the beginners of the psychedelic drug movement, which was Timothy Leary, and who was the other one? Two of them. They were the ones who started the taking of LSD. LSD stands for a long chemical name. It's an artificial drug that you take, and it removes from your mind, like when we say sarvopati vinir muktam, that's what it does to your mind. You just forget about all designations, and you're just in bliss, because you see everyone as the universal whole. So this is what this drug used to do. And the young people, there were two classes of young people who took this drug. Some were pleasure seekers, and some were spiritual seekers. So these musicians and jazz artists, they were taking LSD and other types of drugs for the spiritual experience. But some of the hippies, they were taking for the pleasure experience, just to have an out-of-the-world experience, some type of new type of enjoyment. So this David Allen, he would always take too much. And when you take too much, if you read Radhana Swami's book, because he would speak about this era in America when all of his friends were taking LSD, it would crack your mind. So that's what happened to him. He had what was called a bad trip. And he started chasing Swamiji around the apartment. And Swamiji had to escape, run out of the apartment with nothing. He just had his bead bag, that's all. And Swamiji didn't know where to go. It was nighttime. He went to Mr. Michael's house. And Swamiji said, I simply asked him not to put soap, not to leave the soap on the floor of the shower, because it was dangerous. I'm an old person. I might slip. And he came to attack me as if he was going to kill me. And Michael didn't understand the seriousness of the situation. So Prabhupada told him, he said, there's a Bengali proverb. He said, you accept the guru, and you learn from the guru, and then you kill the guru, and then you become the guru. So then Michael realized that, yes, this is actually very dangerous. So he said, Swamiji, you stay with us. Our place is full of musical instruments. We'll find you another place. And between Michael and Carl, they had Prabhupada stay at Carl's house because it was bigger, it wasn't full of musical instruments, until Michael could find him a new place. It took a week or two. So then it was Michael's responsibility to find a place for Prabhupada. And what he did was he went to the newsstand where the first copy of what was called the Village Voice comes out every morning. And he went to the rental places. And he saw in the rental place a storefront. And that storefront was at 26 Second Avenue. So we'll begin tomorrow with Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue. Hare Krishna.